I've sold stuff here and there, like at art shows through, you know, the past 15 years.
Wow.
But more recently, I'm trying to get more serious about it, you know, like,
I like that,
like posting prices. Some people won't put prices on the Instagram. I don't know if they think it's tacky or what, but I'll just say.
Well, man, we've known each other way back, and just to get it going, we got a special guest, Dirty Winners.
Yo, we got Dirty Winners in the house.
All right.
This is episode 34. Would you say you've done more than 34 pieces of art?
Oh, yeah.
34 times 34, perhaps?
How much is that?
I don't know. There's probably that much in my garage. Like, my garage is overflowing with.
You were saying this thing earlier before we started recording that I really wanted to touch on, man, because you come from a family of artists, right? Mm-hmm. And it specifically, does it range all from painting and illustration? Is it typically stick with that, or is it?
So my dad was a comic book artist.
Oh, Hilly Rose.
Yeah, he did Hilly Rose.
Hilly Rose.
Yeah, one? A few of them.
And The Masked Man was the first one.
Oh.
Like, I don't even know how he did it. Raising kids, he's really into his religion and a full-time business. He has his own business, janitorial business.
Wow.
So, like, I don't know. That kind of made me, when I got older and I started looking at everything that he's done, I was like, what the fuck are you doing, man? Like,
yeah.
you need to start putting shit out.
Not only that, but he would not only just do that, but I'd be over there at his house bawling, right? We'd be playing in the front yard.
Yeah.
Right? And I don't know, what was it, like, for freshman year or something like that, or 13 years old, we're in junior high, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then his pop would show up, and Brandon, and then
Dirty
Winners would be like, oh, my dad's going to come out and play. he would always say it like that. He always had this great, like, this guy's the funniest guy I know, I swear. He was like, yeah, he's going to come out and play. I'd be like, I don't know, he's been gone for a while. Oh, you'll see. Next thing you know, he'd come out all rolled up. And he'd be balling with us.
Swag did he have? Did he have like a Larry Bird swag?
Probably like a
Julius Erving swag.
He was never an athlete. Like,
okay.
He just wanted to have fun with the kids, you know?
Okay.
Like, he wasn't super into sports. But I guess I would say like a Vlade Divac, maybe.
Like a Vlade.
Hey, he has plenty of rings.
Hey, for real.
No, but yeah, he'd be, as I grew up around, he'd be playing the piano, he'd be playing the guitar.
Wow.
And then, so I've always been around it. But like to see them actually make money off of it, my grandpa and my dad, it's like something to shoot for, you know.
So you bring up your grandpa as well. So did he start the lineage of the artistry in your bloodline, in your family?
Yeah, his brother, it's crazy, like his brother got a job at an architectural firm or something, and they asked him to draw something like to get the job, right? And my grandpa, which was his brother, drew it for him, and then he got the job.
Damn.
That's, yay. But family then, like, business, baby.
But then both of the brothers, like, he would do sculpture. His older brother would do sculpture. And yeah, so he started it. I mean, yeah, he's the first to work for Disney, and he lived right by... We still have the house right by Disneyland.
Man.
Yeah.
Because he was an illustrator there, right? So, I mean, that's being at the top of your game. And you, like you said, you would describe your... Because, okay, your art is what, man? You would describe it as abstract, or how would you put it?
Yeah, I would say abstract. I mean, heavily influenced by graffiti.
Okay. Like street art, right?
Street art, because when I was a kid... Back to Dixon Elementary School. Even before Raw, I met Raw at Dixon.
What year was this? What circa year is this?
Dude, we're talking about 92.
Bring us back. 92.
91,
so
92.
He came in sixth grade. I started at Dixon in kindergarten.
And I think I got there like the last few months. the last few months of Dixie.
Did you know Vic Valdez?
No, he doesn't know Vic.
He doesn't know Vic Valdez?
He missed that saga.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, I started there, and probably around third grade, my mom, she's like, oh, you know, let's get you into commercials. Let's get you into... Okay. And I was like, okay, yeah, I think I could do it.
I like
and
that. Mom got the hustler mentality.
Yeah, she got me an agent and like headshots and
hell
stuff.
Yeah.
Dude, okay.
And then so she would drive me to LA for auditions. Like she'd take me out of school and get me McDonald's and be like, all right, you're going in. We're going to do this audition for Wheaties or Kellogg's or whatever. So I would see all this graffiti on the way to LA as a kid.
Wow.
Like, just all the beautiful colors and...
Yeah, because you didn't see that here. Especially
yeah,
not at that time.
Yeah, at that time in Chino, I mean...
You just saw cows, right?
Yeah, pretty much just cows.
That's all we had, right?
That's right. So on your way to auditions at such a young age, you're seeing all this art. And what did it feel like? It just felt like...
Oh, it was just amazing. Like, just all these characters and all these colors. I was just like, this is crazy. I couldn't take my eyes off of it. And like, and you remember, I think it's on the 101 freeway, and it has the kid with the basketball.
Dude, that is so weird. I was going to ask you about that one right now.
That's been there since.
With all the kids, right? There's like
and
five
the church
kids
is not far, right? Like
there.
You can see the church right over the thing.
Yeah. And like the thing I would love is when somebody would do a little tag on that.
Oh.
Like I love the contrast of the art too. Like. It's a realistic painting of a kid with the basketball, but then there's, you know, like, there's a throw up of crazy letters right there with all the, and they always paint over it, but.
So when did you start etching away? Like, was when you went home later?
Yeah, so what happened was in school, I didn't even notice that it was happening, but my teacher would send home these letters and say, "Dear Mrs. Winters, Dirty has been displaying these, this gang writing on his homework, and you know he. Other than that, he's a great student. It's okay. It's just I just want to let you know. I don't know what's going on.
There's no panicking here.
So like, yeah, like, and then as I got older, I just like when all my homework and all my assignments. I would make it like an art project. Like it would all the words would slant to one side, or I would draw on my homework like a character or Fred Flintstone or something, you know?
Right.
And so I didn't know, but the stuff was influencing me as I was getting older. And then speaking of Vic Valdez.
Yeah.
So me and him would see who had the best handwriting style.
Okay.
But we didn't realize, I mean, that's what graffiti artists do.
Right.
Yeah.
They would battle. So, like, we would battle on our homework and see who could make the best looking piece of homework.
Like that.
Do some characters on the side or do you remember Miss Rainey?
I never had her, no.
Oh, you didn't have her?
It's okay. The name sounds familiar, but I never had her.
Okay, so.
Shout out to her if she's still breathing.
Yeah, I mean, she was my favorite teacher.
Oh, she was.
It was
no disrespect.
It was one of those things where it's like, you know, if you're when they talk about how teachers get involved with students.
Yeah. Yes.
And you're like, well, you know, I wouldn't want my daughter to get involved with, but I mean, I really liked Miss Rainey.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, dude, speaking of crushes,
being real acquainted.
The teacher I had a crush on, though, was Miss LaRock.
Miss LaRock.
You know her from 7th grade?
I didn't have her.
She was the yearbook teacher and also the English teacher.
I had a big crush on Mr. Cracker.
Well, I mean, I don't blame you. I got a good spirit.
Hey, so I was going
to ask you. Spirit.
You got, do you remember Mr. Brian?
Yeah, you're
Mr. Brian, yeah.
That's what I had in my high school. So he went to Chino High.
Yeah, we had him in junior high.
And he'd always play the tapes of that one guy.
Garrison Keillor.
Garrison Keillor. All the time.
Dang, that's crazy.
He had some forearms on him. I remember him. He was real.
Yeah, cool. He was a thick dude, man. But the thing I was going to ask you about that, so, but because you come from a lineage of that, of artists, you were saying earlier that you wanted to
at least try to like be as success, or you had in your mind be a success with it, but what kept you, like what inspired you, was that your grandpa was like, dude, you do stuff that I can't do.
Yeah.
Because you were always kind of like on the fly. You weren't trying to emulate anything. It was just coming out of you.
Yeah. It's like when you growing up around that, it's big shoes to fill. Like if you're going to be an artist with that last name, then you got to do something, you know, the bar is at Disney, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, so I felt for a while when I started getting serious about art, started to feel pressure about that and like get discouraged. But my grandfather would tell, any artwork that I would do, I would bring it to him and say, what do you think? What could I do different? Like he loved Picasso, Frida Kahlo, everybody. Like,
so you were already a student of it because you'd ask for a critique. Like you, yeah. It wasn't just like, oh, you know, when you're young, you just like draw and it's all that or whatever. Like you were like working on the art form and he'd give you some feedback on it.
Yeah. So every time he'd come over, you know, or I'd go over there, he'd bring out a pencil and paper and he'd show me how to draw Mickey Mouse or the human face, or, you know, with the human face, you draw the oval and then the lines. They say you got the line for the eyes, the line for the nose, the line for the mouth, and then the ears line up right at the top of the eye.
Oh wow.
You know what I mean? So like
mine.
Michael, but mine, bro. That's crazy. I remember I had an art teacher who was colorblind, mind you.
Oh really?
And he taught me, you're talking about symmetry, right?
Yeah.
That he
yeah.
said that the length between your eye to your other eye is the same length between your nose. I can't explain
yeah,
that,
like
but
you could
this
have a
is
third
the same
eye.
Length. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, you don't realize it because your nose is there, but
yeah.
Yeah, like when you're drawing, that's how you see it. My faces that I would draw would always be fucked up. Like it would be three eyes or the mouth is
you
over
got
here.
Three. And also your form's as big as your foot, right?
Right. That's what I because yeah. man, because I love your shit, man. I love
yeah.
the stuff you do, man.
Thank you. So he would see my stuff and I wouldn't, you know, I would be like, well, it doesn't look like what you do, you know, and he would say I couldn't do what you do. I couldn't be imaginative and think, draw stuff that's not there. He could draw anything that he can look at.
Wow. Okay.
But he couldn't come up with.
So you're like a freestyler.
Yeah.
In a sense.
So it's more freeing to do art like that and more enjoyable. But I mean, some people don't like that type of art. It's all subjective. You know,
right.
Let me ask you, was it harder like doing like a graffiti using like those little spray bottles or using paint or a pencil? What for you, what was the harder thing to master?
Yeah, I mean, I'm no master of a spray can. It's very, very difficult to get those thin lines.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to use different tips. There's different tips that you can order. But and the can control has to be perfect, and the pressure that you put, and the motion, you know.
And also, it has to be like a certain speed, correct?
Yeah. So I've only used spray paint to like for background stuff, and
okay.
I'll mess around with it. But I'm in no means, you know, as good as those guys.
So
like,
the instrument you go for? What instrument do you use? The paintbrush? You prefer the paintbrush?
Yeah. So the paintbrush, markers. Oil, acrylic, but I like to mix in spray paint because
okay.
it gives different textures. And you know, once you can do like create your own stencils. And
man, that world is so fascinating, and that I barely know anything of it in terms of like the framework of it, right? Like I'll look at stuff and I'm like, wow, that's fucking dope because it's how you react to it, right? But in terms of how it's made and all that already, all the bones that goes into it, I
mm-hmm.
barely know enough of it. And watching David Cho and hearing
yeah.
stuff, man, I can just get blown away. And that's what's been more my me understanding, like, oh, all the shit that goes into it, like, of how it's made.
Yeah, I mean, you have to be kind of crazy to do any type of art, I
yeah.
think. because you have to become obsessed with it and you have to start doing it constantly and you have to have like extreme focus. I mean, that's why people, that's why it's therapeutic for people, I think, because like a lot of schizophrenics will do art. Some people with mental health issues, they'll have people come in and do art therapy with them. Cause like it stops you from thinking about anything else.
Right.
But that thing, you know?
And it kind of puts you in a relaxed state, I imagine.
Yeah, so, yeah, like if you're making a song or you're drawing something, you're going to put everything you can into it. And to get to that, it takes practice to get, it's like meditation, you know?
Definitely.
Like, I don't meditate, but I imagine it takes a long time to be able to sit there for...
Yeah. You build up the tolerance. Yeah, so, like, the first 5 minutes, it's probably
you have difficult. To be committed to...
Dude, about, like, 6-8 months ago, I barely started getting into it, at least doing it, and it helps, man. I only do about 10-15 minutes or whatever, but I try to do it every day.
Yeah, you were talking about you do it when you wake up in the morning, right?
That, and I did it earlier today because I didn't do it this morning. So I try to get it in once a day at least, and it does kind of, like, level set, mm-hmm. you know? But speaking about people losing themselves, I'm wanting to ask you, Donda. Oh,
Donda.
That's the question. What is it?
It's top three.
Top three what?
Top three in Kanye's catalog?
Yeah. Top three.
Okay, why? Catalog.
The honesty.
Have you heard it? Dirty? I've heard it. I've gone in. I've heard the whole thing all the way through, and I've been revisiting it because I wanted to be... prepared.
Okay. Sorry, I just wanted to know if you listened to it.
But yeah, go saying? Ahead.
So the reason why I got a top three, man, it's the first time I heard it when he did the live listening, man.
The third listening?
The first one.
Okay.
Like, I immediately was like, okay, this is a classic. And even how sonically it sounds, the honesty he has on it, having his mom preaching throughout it and him sharing that with us really resonated with me. Like how she says, the harmony hushers and like, and I am my son's mother. Like, why is Kanye fearless? Like you hear like these teachings that he had, you know, like he shares that in depth with you. The introduction with the Donda chat. I would say to me, that was the second greatest Kanye intro for his albums. Like, my favorite Kanye intro is, I thought about killing you today, and best believe, because I love myself way more than you.
Yeah. Right.
And that I feel this intro is the second best, because of that honesty. Like of
the intro mom. It's not his mom on the first, because it's a lady saying, Donda, Donda, Donda.
Yeah,
right?
It's Selena Johnson, the girl from the All Falls Down song.
Okay.
The one that replaced Lauryn Hill.
Okay.
So she's the one that narrates that. But because of that honesty, the J Electronica verse.
Oh, that's the best
honesty. Yeah. That's
on the album, right?
That verse is, that's my second favorite verse. The Off the Grid is my favorite song. Like, I think Off the Grid is the best Kanye song.
Is that considered drill?
Yeah.
Drill music?
You can call it drill music. He's using that young buck shit. You
and
know
who
that young
feature on that?
Favio Foreign.
He sounds good. That's
that
the first. I never heard. He's It's like a sing. It's kind of a melodic rap, right?
Mm-hmm.
It sounds layered.
That's the first.
It sound layered.
That's
the first time I heard him, and I was like, "Wow, this guy sounds
tattoos
really good.
On my ribs. I'm off the grid." Yeah, it's
Favio Foreign.
Favio Foreign is. Let me double check.
I am
to make sure.
So I've listened to the album. Twice all the way through, right?
It's a long listen, right?
It's a long listen.
Yeah, so like I listened
to
Fabio it Foreign. For the second time today all the way through because I wanted to keep it fresh.
Yeah.
To make sure maybe I'll pick something new out of it that I'll dig or something like that. And because I love Kanye, respect for him, I wanted to hear it more and then out of respect for you, you know? So, if your album... is as long as a Kubrick movie, we already have problems, right? with all due respect.
No, yeah.
I feel like to me, I still haven't heard Jesus is King, which I still need to listen to, but I think I could safely say that this album, for me, from all the Kanye albums, It's either second to last or last. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of like all over the place. I don't, you know, you have different verses of different songs. Mm-hmm. It goes way too long. And I think the idea is there, but like it's all over the place. And I just don't think the songs are that strong. Mm-hmm. You know, I kind of find it boring. I don't find it gripping. So that was just my take on it. Obviously, like musically, sonically, and all that, it's all good because, I mean, it's Kanye West. And
Right. There's
nothing reducing that value and that scope. And I applaud him trying different things. But I feel like trying this different kind of style or whatever, it seemed less dangerous, you know? Like, it didn't have, like... It just didn't sound good to me, man. I think it sounded like a lesser artist to me.
Are you referring to, like, the lyrics? Because he says, sounds amazing, production, it sounds amazing.
Just in terms of the value and quality of it, but in terms of how it's all put together, I don't like it. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's very good, you know? Like, it's just not for me.
It's 27 songs?
27 tracks.
It's like right under 3 hours. I think it's like 2 hours and 20 some.
I mean, it's an hour and 45 minutes.
I think I've heard a lot of people say, like, it's too long. He could have condensed all the best songs into maybe 12, 13, 14. There are some really standout songs. Like,
the first song's amazing.
I like
Donda Chant?
Yeah.
You like it when he just says Donda?
No, what's the first track?
That song's fucking ridiculous. That's amazing.
That song's ridiculous.
And is
the
Baby on that? Or
the Baby? Yeah, he's on Jail Part 2. Oh, I thought his verse was better than Jay-Z's verse.
Oh, yeah. Jay-Z's verse was like, eh. But it's just his rhythm and pattern.
But like the song, I Know God Breathed On This is probably one of the craziest productions I've ever heard in my life.
It's like Yeezus.
Yeah, like type, Yeah, you literally Yeezus type. Like, that's how I kind of feel about this album, because Yeezus is personally my favorite Kanye West album.
Better than Dark Twisted Fantasy?
Yes. MBDTF's number 2 for me.
Wow. Yeezus is pretty damn amazing.
And Yeezus had so much backlash. So much. And I don't see this album having as much backlash as Yeezus.
Right.
So I think in a couple of years, people will get a hold of it more.
It's starting to grow on me after a couple listens. But yeah, I do think it's a long listen. Mm-hmm. It's a lot. And so, like, there's some songs that I really like. I like the one with Lauryn Hill.
Yeah. A lot. That sample's amazing, man.
And then I like the one with West Side Gunn and Conway.
Ooh, Conway the Machine.
Yeah.
Kills that.
But on that one, remind me to ask you about Mike Dean, too.
Okay, Mike Dean, okay.
So on that one, on Kanye's verse, he kind of like loses the flow a little bit. And then he's like, he's trying to stay on beat and he's like, yo, but then he kind of loses it. And I was like, I don't know. Like, I've done that too, but... Because he has Consequence and Rhyme Fest writing for him?
He
has all these writers, right?
Yeah, Consequence for sure. I don't know about Rhyme Fest no more.
I just felt like they could have filled... Because that part, it throws you off, like... Mm-hmm. But he probably kept it because he liked the energy of the take... Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But it loses the listener because he loses it at that point. But
good point.
I don't know. Like, I could see why he left it. He's probably like, fuck it. I like the energy of it.
And he said, too, that they released it prematurely. I don't know if there's truth behind that.
Right.
And also
was something that he would have fixed.
Yeah, and not having cuss words on it
as
well makes it... Not flow, right? Because you don't hear that cuss word in it. You're like, damn, why is it not explicit?
See, even though I've heard music longer than you have, because I've been alive 10 years longer than you, but you and I, Brandon, have heard music as long as we have each other because we're the same age.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I still feel like I'm a novice when it comes to understanding the rhythmic and the rapping patterns of rap. Because when you both are breaking down, he was out of the flow, he lost a beat. Like, I can't even pick that up.
Yeah.
So, I still feel like I need to grow with that, you know, because I'm not, maybe because I'm tone deaf too, you know, like, I don't, like, I can't hear, like, oh, you know, like when they hear, like, oh, the rapper's like, oh, I can't go with that beat, you know, like, I, They're trying to find the base. They're trying to, yeah, exactly. They're trying to find the baseline with it, and I'm not very good at picking that up.
Well, it's just something that Ben, that I think stands out in the ear. Like if you're used to a certain way, that's that, like the way that he, I think that was like the first, that's a, like the only mess up that I think that I really found.
Heard, yeah.
There was like, and then there was one kind of an abrupt ending. I mean, what was it? The one where he says, he's talking about, oh, he did the Hurts line.
Everybody hurts, but I'm Judge Reynolds.
Right, right. Yeah, so yeah. That part felt a little awkward at the end.
Yeah.
But I can't, I mean, I've done awkward shit too. No, I just think like at his level, I think maybe they should have, you know, there's spaces that you think should be filled or cut. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Speaking of that, man, like you,
those are minor things. I mean, I want to talk about Mike Dean. Is he's doing all the organ?
He does all of that, bro. Like literally, like there's a joke all month on Twitter about how Kanye was holding him hostage the whole time.
Right, to get the shit down. But he's not mixing though.
He's not mixing no more, yeah.
Cause I think that's what he was saying, is like from the backlash, he would say, no, I'm not mixing the album. He's not holding me hostage.
He's not holding me hostage. Because like, he would post a pic, finally, I could see the sun. And they're like, oh, Mike Dean's out now.
You know that right. Guy did a lot of the Ghetto Boys stuff and Scarface stuff?
Yeah, he's been around for so long.
I love Ghetto Boys, man. But when you were talking about your stuff, because you, Renato, as we have talking, you've, you know, done rapping, but you continue to make music yourself, Dirty. So what's all these collabs that you've been putting out? Don't you have some quite bits of stuff out there?
Yeah, so I got that's some...
Cedar, right?
Cedar. Yeah, that's probably like the most recent with Chill the God on the beats. Mm-hmm. An amazing producer. He's from Detroit. Detroit, Michigan? And, yeah, I mean, I've been putting out stuff for a couple years. Just experimenting, and like I said, like I can't, those mistakes that I see, like I make those mistakes too in my stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'll just leave it and just say fuck it.
Yeah.
And go on to the next thing. So I get it.
Sometimes it's hard to keep up with the beat, right? I remember.
Well, it's like okay, well this space needs to be filled, but what do you say? And then sometimes you say might say something kind of corny because you're trying to fill the space, but then it.
Yeah, I need one bar right here, but it didn't match this bar. Like, how do I?
You used to rap. You used to rap too, right?
I used to always like not be able to like flow with the whole beat. It was so hard for me because of what Raw was talking about, tone deaf, right? Because I wouldn't hear that little drum where you would have to flow into it like the da da da. Like mine was always staggered.
Right.
And I never really got it. The thing we probably never did was educate ourselves in bars. Like you need to write literally like. Five words, right? Mm-hmm. And then another line. Right. And then another line.
Well, it's like the beats per measure,
exactly
right?
Exactly how the beat goes.
But then, just like abstract art, there's abstract music, too.
Yeah.
So it's like, sometimes you might be not following the structure, 16 bars or whatever it is, but if it feels right, then it could be good to some people.
That's true, man. And the good thing is that you're continuously just working on stuff. So you work full time, you hold down your family, and then how do you make all that time for all the different stuff you love to do? Is it, like you said, from learning from seeing your grandpa and your dad, how they always just, they just kept busy and it just became like a thing where, you know, just like almost like a sixth sense for you to just like continually just keep churning stuff?
Yeah, I mean, you always get... It's a gift and a curse because you're always getting the ideas coming in, like, I want to paint this or I want to do a song like this, but you're at work or you're doing this or that, you know? So maybe, like, sometimes I'll keep a notebook, write down some ideas, and then when I get the chance, or maybe do a quick sketch or a voice note.
Kind of just like a trick, like, you know, like, oh, Like from there, you could branch off. Maybe like you get the main idea down.
Exactly. Maybe you have a line or an idea or just even just a word that you hear during the day. And then so you write it down and you come back to it when you
Find, like from my experience, that when I was constantly writing and constantly working on stuff, the ideas wouldn't stop. Doesn't matter where you were, because it is like it is a muscle.
It's a muscle, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then I find now when I do it less and less and seldom, less ideas come.
It goes away, yeah.
So it's like if you're constantly working, it's just like that well, man. That well is always there, and it's about getting that back into what I've been trying to do. And I try to do it in other forms, whether it's little ideas here and there, but it's nothing like. Like almost me, because I don't have any responsibilities in terms of either my job or family, but you know, I'm not married, I don't have any kids, I don't have anything like that, but I want to make it a thing where it's like my job, almost like, okay, between these hours, I'm just going to sit down and work on this.
Right.
Because that's what I have to do.
Right.
And it's about, I got to make it work that way.
I think it's Stephen Pressfield. I think he wrote, what is it? Is it The War of Art? Or he wrote a book talking about showing up every day for like with create, well, it's with anything really. Mm. But you know, whether you're writing a script for a movie or you're painting something or making a song, like you said, set yourself up for, okay, at 6 o'clock, from 6 to 7, I'm gonna mm-hmm. just work, I'm just gonna show up,
right?
Yep.
And then if nothing comes out of it, oh well, the right. next day you show up and then maybe something does,
definitely.
But like, I think that's the same with anything in life, though. It's, they always mm-hmm. say, like, what, 80% is showing up, or...
I know Woody Allen said, I don't know if he was the originator of it, but he said 90% of success is showing up.
Well, 80% of abs is in the kitchen, 20% is in the gym, right? That's what they say.
There you go.
Well, this comes from the guy with the six-pack.
So that's what, exactly. That's what Dame Dash talks about. He's like, dedicate just at least 1 hour to your progress,
yeah,
to your craft. And that's how you could start. If you don't like find a way to time management that, because we all got the time. Whenever people say, oh, I ain't got the time, that's like an excuse and an easier way of telling you no.
Well, there's a Let's difference. Be real, I think right? there's people that have more responsibilities that have to put that time elsewhere. But in terms True. Of time, we all have the same amount
like,
of time.
Like TV.
But whether how you divide it, that's different for us, right?
I find myself watching TV sometimes. Yeah. Like, and a day, I'm like, damn, I watched 3 hours of TV. I could have channeled this energy differently.
Right. Right. Correct.
So like a muscle, like what you're talking about. You know, just write it down on paper. Put it on top of your roof. As soon as you wake up, that's the first thing you see.
Do you have
Do
you have a longer streak product. Than Brett Favre?
At the gym?
That you haven't missed the gym?
I missed the gym 2 days this year because of
You go LASIK, 7 days a week?
8 days a week, like the Beatles.
Whoa.
No, I missed 2 days because of the LASIK. Yeah.
You fucking
so
pussy.
Friday and Saturday. I didn't go.
Were you wearing contacts before?
Yeah, I was wearing contacts. So since first grade, dude, in our gene pool, the Lomelli gene pool,
We're blind as bats, bro.
Chris, too?
Chris
He's
is,
gotten worse, but he has the best vision from us three brothers.
No, he don't. I got 20/15.
Well, now because he got the surgery. Me, I'm blind as a bat, dude. If I don't have my contacts on, I'll be like,
have you guys?
Is that clean
so,
summers?
So dirty. Like literally, I asked my clean summers. Hey, so dirty winters is not related to old dirty bastard if anybody's asking. So, dude, like I literally asked my optometrist. I'm like, what does 20/200 vision mean? Because that's what I always had. Mm-hmm. So remember, like, if you ever go to an optometrist, they make you stand 20 feet away from the wall where all the big letters are at,
okay.
right?
Right.
If you're able to name all the letters, cool, you got 20/20, right? So let's say this person with 20/20 vision stands 200 feet further and looks at that same distance, at the same paper, whatever. Mm-hmm. That's what someone with 20/200 vision sees from that 20 feet distance.
Okay.
Pretty much. So like
I always had 20/20, like when you go to the pilot vision, huh? You go to the nurse's office in elementary.
That kind of 20/20, baby.
In elementary school.
Guy, that's why he always saw trouble from a mile away. It's like Raul, he's turning around.
But I think it's starting to go though. Like
okay.
shit's getting
well blurry. I think as you get older you have things, well, yeah, you know, but you, I imagine, but you never worn glasses, never had, didn't your dad wear glasses?
My dad wears them, yeah.
So you got the good eyesight from your mom's side?
I don't know, because she wears glasses too, but okay. My dad's had them since he was, yeah. Since
but not
was
like younger. Super thick or anything?
Bifocals?
No, if you were to see mine, I'll show you later. You'll be like, God damn!
I'm sure
it's like a windshield.
It used to have the band on the back, right? Or no?
No, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't rock that.
You didn't do the Kurt Rambis, bro?
No, but my pops used to tape up my shit because he was like, oh, we don't have to go get it fixed. I had to go. There was a point in my life where I had glasses with a leg from a different one. It was off the internet. It was embarrassing, man.
You had a transform.
I was like, Dad, like, it's not hard enough to live with these big ears. Now I'm going to go with plastic glasses like this.
Shit, man.
Dude, I remember. I wonder if you were there, Mel. Like, because I know you were in the school, but this just hit me because I only went to Dixon for, I think, 2 or 3 months for the rest of the year, right?
And, right, in sixth grade.
Do you remember? I remember his name. The only reason I remember his name is because he made me cry. Do you remember Kevin Hunt? Was that his name? Kevin Hunt?
Kevin Hunt.
He was like,
why did he make you cry? What did he say?
So bro? I was new to the school, right? So then, and I still hadn't built that callus of being made fun of my ears, right?
Yeah.
So I was new to the school. You already feel like a little uncomfortable. We were standing in line, and it was a good one, man. He got me good. I didn't even know this kid. He was another, because you know, you had to line up.
Yeah.
He's like, oh my God. Look at these guys' ears. They're like cave ears.
Like who?
Like cave. His wife said I had cave ears. And I remember, like, I just, like, it was one of those quiet cries, which is sad. Yeah. I was like this. People were like, oh man, that's mean.
You should have been like, you should walk in. And
no, I didn't have that. Bitch. I didn't have that spine back. I didn't have that spine back then.
Kevin, but I remember that.
Did you guys ever have any moments like that at all? Or am I just exclusive in his group with stuff like that?
I had a teacher tear up my honor roll certificate.
Wait, what? What happened? Was that Ms. Rainey?
No, Mrs. Hallett.
Wait, what happened?
That was probably like the most embarrassing thing.
What grade and how did this occur?
It was fifth grade. And so I would always make the honor roll like in elementary school. Seventh grade, it was all downhill.
You had the Magic Johnson Converse Lakers.
Yeah, once you get
this guy
weapons,
always wore like
Converse
size
weapons.
This guy,
I want to get those.
Those
again.
Are the Larry Bird and Magic.
I want to hear this story because I want to dive into this guy's personality. He's always God. Wait, what happened to this story?
Okay, so it was I would get honor roll, but you know how your behavior. On the report cards, they write in your behavior, like, needs improvement.
Satisfactory.
Satisfactory. Or
bunch of O's, baby. Outstanding.
So all my behavior was fucked. Like, but I would get good grades because I was a class clown.
Right, right.
So I was fucking around, but I was still getting the good grades. So that was the criteria for honor roll was... Even if you got the good grades, fine, but you have to have the behavior to go along with it.
Wow.
Right?
Another way to control you, you know?
Yep. Exactly.
They teach you to control that early.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah, to be a productive member, well, to be a sheep of society.
Real talk.
So, I got A's and B's, but I was just fucking around in class. And so we're at the awards assembly. And they go, and they even called my mom to come, to the award. Hey, you know, your son, Dirty, Mrs. Winters, we want you to come out and see him receive his honor roll certificate.
God damn.
And so I didn't even know she was there. Anyway, you know, you're sitting on the floor in the media center in this with orange carpet and, you know, so anyway, they go. And for honor roll, Mr. Dirty Winters.
Oh, yeah.
And so I stand up and everyone's like, yeah.
Dirty, dirty, dirty.
And it was like slow motion, you know? Like everyone, yeah. Everything slowed down, you know? And I get up, high five my friend. Yeah, yeah. And then my teacher, so the principal was the one who announced it. His name was Mr. Barboza.
I don't even remember him at all.
Mr. Barboza. So he's the one that made the announcement. I start walking up, and then my teacher, Miss Hallett, stands up, and she goes, "No, no, 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 no."
That she did one, the Kanye before yeah. there was a Kanye.
She did.
I'm gonna let you finish.
She's like, "I'm gonna let you finish, but you need to rip up that award because."
Wow. Dude.
She goes, "No, no, no, that shouldn't be. Rip it up." And then,
so were you halfway up there or like up the stage?
Yeah, I was like halfway. I didn't get to the stage.
So when this was happening, you were like, what's going on?
Yeah, I was in the middle of my high five. I was like at mid high five. And like all the chicks were like, yeah, daddy. Oh,
he's so
And
hot.
I was like, yeah, hugging the chicks. And then, so.
Gary Beck.
She points at me, he's like, that's my K-boy.
Yeah. And so I stand up, and then, the teacher said, no, that shouldn't be. Rip it up. So then he rips it in front of everybody.
Damn. Like,
everybody was
fucking
silent.
Ruthless.
Like, you could just hear the rip in the media center. And then everyone's like, ooh.
You just hear the ooh.
You know, you hear all the kids, and then they're all feeling bad for me, you know? Like,
right.
For the next couple weeks, like, everybody was coming up to me, dude, that was fucked up, man, what they did to you. And, like, I didn't realize, I don't know if it fucked me up or not.
But, dude, you know what?
Like, your influence, it fucked up your classmates, because you're the class, like, you set the tone with the grades, but you still give them recess in the classroom. Because you're the class clown, right? We all still laughing, so.
But you know what's great? Wow, that's a good story, man. Like, sorry you lived it. But at the same time, I'm glad you did also, because who knows what good came out of it, right? Like, because that makes you think.
I think it's funny.
Yeah. I'm thinking about, like, earlier this week, and I was actually going to, I wrote this down because I wanted to bring it up, and it's a perfect way of going into it. Some lady, I guess the video went viral, and this probably happens, like at least few a day. It was like crying. It's like, oh, they made me go home from the gym because they didn't like my belly that I was coming off my sports bra.
Jesus.
And she was crying and people were all, oh, no. And immediately I was like, whatever happened to keeping the embarrassment to your fucking self?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like when it comes to this, like you just take it, you run with it. Why is everyone gotta know all your fucking shit?
Well, yeah, I mean, if it happened to a kid now,
oh, it's a wrap.
They put it on.
It's a wrap. It's on your mom. Because what did your mom? Did your mom go to like, why did you feel it? What did she tell you at the moment?
My mom complained.
Okay,
good.
She went to the principal's office and said, "What the fuck?" You know?
Yeah, you don't do that.
Well, I mean, it was a bit theatrical from the teacher.
She was so I didn't realize as a kid. Because I just didn't think any... I felt embarrassed because, like,
naturally,
all the attention was on me and I was like, oh, shit. And everybody was telling me, oh, I feel so bad for you.
That makes it worse, right?
And then I was like, oh, okay, I guess I do feel bad. And so, anyway, like, she took me on a trip after that. And she...
Your mom?
Yeah.
Okay.
And she would talk...
Is like, hop on, dirty.
She would talk to me about it and say, like, you know, what they did at the assembly wasn't okay, that wasn't right, what they did to you. And she's like, how do you feel? Are you, like, she was like,
whoa.
Yeah.
Dude, it sounds like your mom, like, she set the tone. Like, she got you the headshots, got you the McDonald's. Let's go ahead and do this.
Yeah.
Like, she had a real conversation with you.
Yeah.
To have you explore your feelings. How do you feel about situation? And you're sixth grade?
Fifth grade, right?
That was fifth grade.
So you're 11, 10 years old.
Yeah.
Damn, bro. So,
that's
amazing, man.
No wonder. That speaks volumes of why. Let me tell you how this guy's temperament. Ever since I've always known this guy, man, he's always been just balanced, dude. Balanced. But in between that balance, there's always this fire because he's the funniest guy I know. Always will make me crack up. Doesn't matter. His voice is everything. He raps, he paints, all that. Plays ball, but just always and fearless too. And maybe you were a little afraid of her, but never back down from anyone. I saw him find a gym teacher. He bent you over, Sheffield, remember?
You saw that fight?
Yeah, because you gave a little punch in the chin as a joke.
And then he threw you over the bed, started punching you back in the head, remember? And you were laughing. Yeah, rest in peace, Mr. Sheffield, because he passed away some years back. Yeah. This was in gym class in our freshman year. But I remember this guy, and then you almost fought this one guy who used to work at Easy Takeout Burger.
I used to work there.
What was his name? Yeah, so I'll bring it up. And then we walked over there, and I was in your side.
The one on Francis?
No, but we walked over in high school. He was an older guy. And I think you knew him. I think you worked with him for a little bit. He was
Sammy?
Sammy.
He had a piercing right here.
This guy almost fought
Sammy. I worked with him.
He almost fought Sammy when
I was 16, bro.
When we were 14 years old. When we were 14 years old. And I think he was a couple years older than us, right?
He was in...
Fucking small world. That's funny.
Yeah, he was a couple grades above us.
So that's what I'm saying. This guy's temperament was always like... And he always... dressed like that. My parents would see him, they'd be like, oh, he's just like a gangster, because he had the old size 44s, right?
The Dickies, baggy,
the
double press.
The Chuck Taylor, the long shirt. He always had that style. Yeah. Always had his hair slicked back. Always just in him. He had his ring.
I would ask my mom and dad, hey, yeah, I want to get... They would say, what do you want? What school clothes do you want to get? So I'd say, yeah, I want to get Dickies. But they wouldn't let me get size. They wouldn't let me get the big size.
Yeah, you so, sagged them.
Big so time. I would have to. I would get my dad's because they were bigger, so sweet. And then I would sag them, or like I would get his flannel because it would be bigger. You know, back then it was the baggy style was in. You know,
oh, big time, dude.
Who was your main influence when it came to wardrobe? Like with the Dickies and the YT, who did you watch?
Cube, right?
Yeah, I mean, Ice Cube always had the Dickies and the Converse and
the solid hat.
Yeah, and like I love the Chola chicks.
The Chola chicks.
So like I want
you like the black outline on the lips.
Yeah, and the and the pompadour. So like I wanted to get chicks. So I was trying to be cool, you know.
That's funny because I had the same swag in high school, bro. Just Dickies and plain t-shirt. It was a white tee, a black tee. I wanted to ask you because I know Raw was into the rockabilly scene. And I know that was big in your era.
I wish I could be a rockabilly.
So how's that for you, man? Like when you would see like all these new crowds pop up, like you would see the rockabilly, but you had that hip-hop swag.
Yeah, it was crazy because in elementary school, you know, everybody is... pretty much the same. But then when you go to junior high, you start to see people join the different cliques and groups, right?
Yeah.
Because, like, in our time, it was... Well, in junior high,
We were the ballers, right? We just played
You had the athletes, and then you had the ravers.
Yeah. And rebels. The rebels kind of
stuff. In junior high, I guess it started... Yeah, rebels...
But the ravers were big at that time in Housers, right? Like house music and all that other stuff with the mustache haircut.
And they were doing graffiti too, like the Tigers.
The ravers,
and stuff.
Huh?
Yeah, the ravers. Because they would have the
little just here in the front, everything was all shaved off, right?
So ravers actually tagged in your day, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. They'd have
ours just pops mollies, bro.
And the jeans were all split at the bottom, right? Yeah. The jeans would be split at the bottom.
Right. So it would be the long bangs and then everything else shaved.
Right.
So they would have that, and then they would have like really dope t-shirts. Like it would be a graffiti t-shirt with some graffiti letters or something, but then these huge pants.
And they had the belt that would curve under like
You're talking about that black belt that has the extra lap
that you get from the swap meet.
Yeah, they would have that. They just had the belt roll out.
I remember those.
So yeah, so as a kid going into junior high, then you start to think. And then you see all these guys getting girls, too.
Yeah, and that's what entices everything.
So you're like, oh, if I dress like that, I could get that girl.
You know? Exactly.
And so it's like, you had the gangsters, just guys in white t-shirts. And you had the rebels, the athletes, which we were on the dark, me and Raul were on the dark side of the athlete playground.
We were the polar opposite, right? We were on the other side.
So you had the popular athletes, like in the middle court by the ping pong tables. Did you go to a junior high, Ramona?
No, I went to Magnolia and Chino. I'm your guys' rivals.
So, Magnolia. So you had the more popular
kids.
You're
like a center court.
In the middle. But then we went to the other side, like the fucked up rim, no net.
You know, we were the better group, though.
Dude, yeah, I mean,
y'all were the underground kings.
We played them in the final, and then Ben took a charge and they didn't call it.
It was Ben, and
it was me, Ben, you.
I had an outside shot. Like, I wasn't one of the best on the crew. I had a good outside shot.
But, Chris Terry and Pat McClung, it was all five of us. We played.
I was coming off the bench. Okay. Was it five?
No,
on
I think
five?
It was just 5-on-5. It was you, me, Ben, Chris Terry, and Pat McClung.
Whoa, really?
Yeah, against that just came out of the dome.
Against Andy, Tablante.
Tablante,
Richard.
Tomas,
and then Richard.
I think Richard was in their squad.
So you guys would pretty much would be the...
Maybe.
Devendra Chatterpaw?
Maybe.
So you guys would pretty much be like the guys that are good as fuck in basketball, but wouldn't be on the team, and you guys would shit
on
them.
No, I was in the Ramona. I was in the Ramona
team still,
for sure.
Those guys, him and Ben were on the team.
Yeah, okay. We were on the team for sure. But we just played with our boys on that side, and they played over there. Whatever.
It was just like they were more popular. You know?
It makes me think about, like, because I remember in high school, I made the team junior year in JV team, but then I remember senior year, I didn't make the team. And I remember everyone that made the team, like, most of my friends were on it, right? Alfred, Black Miguel, Janos. And they would all play in the main basketball court. Mm. The first basketball court that you see on the quad, right?
Okay,
right.
But, like, I was, like, with just like you guys are. Like,
you're
outcast.
Out to the side?
I was at the very last court with all my homies since day one that didn't make the team.
Yeah.
So, like, Christian, there's one guy named Anthony Mumola. And I remember one time we played them.
Oh, like, shit. Just like us. That's our story, man.
Like, we played them.
Except
Barcelona.
Except
Barcelona's
on junior
like,
high.
Let's ball. Like, my crew versus your crew, because I had a chip on my shoulder. Yeah.
Right.
I'm like,
what's up?
I should be in this team.
Right, right, right.
And I remember, like, we were beating them. They ended up beating us in the end, but I remember, how passionate they were trying to stop us, prevent us. In my head, I'm like, y'all know I'm this good. Like, fuck y'all.
And it gets super physical.
It gets
too,
super
physical. You got to prove who's got the best.
Ben almost fought Tomas. Remember, he was pushing him because he did the charge and he called it. He's like, no, we're not. Which I get.
Tomas charged him, or
because it was 5-on-5, and then we were playing. The game was real tight. I think at this point it was like 18-16.
It was really physical.
And then Tomas drove, and I remember like Ben said, like, go charge. Like, he took a charge.
Yeah.
And he made it. He's like, no, that's not my charge. You won. And walked off. So Ben started pushing him from the back.
Oh.
And like, shoot for it.
Yeah, I do remember that.
Yeah, that's a wrap.
Ben's a G for that, man.
Well, dude, Mel and Ben, you guys been friends for how long, man?
Since we went to preschool together.
Dude, you guys have been friends forever, huh?
Preschool.
The one on, it's not there anymore, but, you know, the fire station on Central by City Hall?
Yeah, right across the street.
Where that dirt playground is at?
Yeah.
There used maybe it still is, but there used to be a preschool there, and our moms...
I think there is.
Our moms met at church, and then they ended up putting us in the same school. We have pictures of that, too.
Dude, they've known each other forever.
I don't know how... In preschool, what are you, four or five?
Yeah, dude, since then, that's insane, huh?
4 years old? Yeah, because first grade is 6 years old.
Well, kindergarten, you're like 5. So that's your fourth. You're
so, 4 years old. But we lived in different school districts. So once he went to kindergarten, he went to Newman. I went to Dixon.
You guys would see each other in church?
See each other in church. Yeah, I mean, we hung out still all the time. I'd go to his house. And then we were reunited in junior high. Ramona.
And right there, it clicked back
up. And we're like, we're taking over.
That is so
cool. Dude, I meant to ask you, so like, you know how, when you hear me describe your temperament that way, what's your reaction to it? Do you think it's like off, or do you see that?
Yeah, I see that. I'm pretty calm. I mean, I have moments where I have my freak out moments, you know?
Of course, man.
Like, my kid, I feel bad. My kids have seen me. One time, I was in a fight. I got in a fight with my wife, my kids. I'm not this way anymore, but you know, I had some anger issues.
Okay. And
I'm more chill now, but like my daughter will always bring it up to me to make me feel bad, you know.
Okay, oh. I got you.
She'll be
she
like,
always has it in the holster, huh?
Yeah, but it's just funny.
Yeah, yeah.
So like I was in a fight with my wife, we were arguing and my son and my daughter were in the back seat, and I don't know what happened. She said something and then walked into the store. It was at Togo's, I think.
Okay.
And I just started punching the steering wheel.
It had to come out somehow.
Bam, bam. Yeah. And my kids are little. And the steering wheel or the horn just starts going off. And it won't go off. It won't stop.
You know, it's art, babe. It's art. That's when I started fucking experimenting with physical objects.
And then another time, I started punching the steering wheel again. Wait, let me see. So it wouldn't go off, and then I started punching it, and then it went off again. No, it stopped going off after. Like, I fucked up the horn somehow.
Right. Do you anyway. Think at that time it was more like it was just something that was just building, like frustration, or was it just more like impulsive?
Yeah, I mean, I think I hold it in, you know. Life's frustrations, you have to get it out somehow, right? So now, yeah, I mean, I do art,
right.
I do rap.
Yeah.
I let it out in that way instead of, yeah, punching something or yelling, you know.
Right, man. When you are you in the terms of like, because you're a student of art, man, and you've constantly practiced it, when you're putting stuff on the canvas and when you feel like it's done or when you see certain things, do you pick things out from there that you're like, oh, this kind of what represents this emotion? What certain either things you use, the way you strike it or the colors you use?
That's interesting because I never know what it means. It's a lot of it is just train of thought, freestyle. There's not a lot of planning that goes into it. I mean, I'd get a lot better if I planned more, but that's no fun.
Right? No.
if you're just throwing paint on the canvas, like look at the
Basquiat, right?
I wouldn't compare myself to Basquiat, but like the videos that I see of him painting,
right?
And I think that's the therapeutic part, is like you're throwing different paint on and you're looking at what images evolve through different textures and
right.
patterns and colors and stuff, and then you kind of get maybe something forms into a head or a body or,
right.
or an arm or a hand.
Yeah.
And then you start to box it in, you know? Like, see how he's got the pink here, so
right.
it goes along the head. But see, underneath, there's all this other underpainting.
Yeah.
So he's isolated everything into a head. Maybe underneath the pink and the blue, there's more markings, right?
Yeah, and like with him, everything, it seems like typical, a lot of stuff was on the ground, right? He would lay it all on the ground and use paint rollers, right? And form it out that way and all that. And it's all about, like, I guess, like you said, you create something and from there branch it off into something else, huh?
Do you remember being a kid finger painting? Or like your parents putting you like on a baby seat and like with a canvas and paint and you just rubbing your hands?
So I don't know. I can't really, like, I remember being in kindergarten and painting, and like you could still smell. You remember the smell of the paste
yeah.
that you would use?
Yeah,
they didn't use glue. They used paste, right?
That's what it was, right?
Non-toxic, baby.
Because it's non-toxic.
Yeah,
Elmer.
I think all the shit we used was toxic
back in the day. Because like it's funny you bring that up with the painting, how like you sculpt it to in a way, and you might see a face, you might see this. Because me and my lady, we always try to proactively have my son do artistic things like that.
Oh, that's
so we'll
good, yeah.
get him on his high chair,
mm-hmm.
put like we literally buy like these little canvas papers from the Dollar Tree, bro. They're like little 5x7s. And we buy paint, and he finger paints. And they look like, to me, bro, they look like Jackson Pollocks, bro.
Yeah.
Like, they really do. And it's funny you bring that up, like, how sometimes it might form into a face. Because when I really observe my son's finger painting, like, I could see a flower. Yeah. Or I could see, like, a sun. And I'm like, holy shit, like, he did that with his hands?
Yeah, there's so many things that...
Yeah, man.
Because you don't know what's going on in that head.
Some people will get
it. Yeah, man.
They'll get a painting, like throw a whole bunch of paint on it, and then turn it and like spray it down with water or with oil. You would use terpenoid to make it drip. So some people will turn the canvas around so that different patterns form. And then just by chance, that's the thing that I love about art is like you don't know what's gonna happen.
Yeah.
That's the most fun part. And with music too, sometimes just freestyling or just writing a couple ideas down and just like sometimes when I record, I'll just start saying something to the beat and trying to feel it out.
Right.
I guess jazz musicians would call it like scatting.
Yeah.
Is it scat?
Yeah, but it's kind of like, exactly what you're saying, because that's what I do. Like with music, it'd be like I would hear the music, and then from there in my head, like a song already comes. So you just like do sounds to kind of go with it. And then from there, then like later on, I form in the words to see how it fits. And then from there, you play with the time. You're like, okay, you know, I want to say this instead, but it's about getting that form of it, right? To go with the dance with it.
Yeah, and that's the funnest part when they talk about. It's like I've heard people talk about you should fall in love with the process, not the result of it. Because
the labor part.
Because that's where the magic happens.
Yeah.
But it can be frustrating too, because you go out and just make shit for five nights in a row.
Right.
But then the sixth night you hit it.
Yeah, because that shit has to come out.
You know,
right?
Being an artist in your respected craft, like using your own hand brushes, your own techniques, how do you feel about like graphic designers or like Photoshop?
I totally respect it. Like I actually want to take graphic design classes.
Because that's hard in its own respected craft, right?
You know, it's that's a whole nother lane because... See, like, when they talk about, look at the McDonald's logo, yellow and red. When they talk about what colors invoke certain emotions, what images, you know. So, like, you have to know, you know, like, these companies are hiring these people who have done research on humans to figure out, okay, what's going to be the most attractive looking logo or what's gonna this is gonna make me want to buy this product,
you know? React psychologically
too, right? That's what's crazy. So there, that's really interesting. I mean, those guys, and it's so much more precise, like, you know, graphic design. I mean, there's some abstract stuff, but you know, like this Radiohead poster, that looks like it's
almost like double exposure.
It's like distorted.
Mixed with.
It's got to be a Photoshop. Maybe there's some original artwork. And then that's what I've been doing lately too, is like I'll do original and then I'll put it in Photoshop and fuck with it. And that's really fun. Because then you can, double up the image like you said.
Because you're referring to the OK Computer poster I have from the album cover.
Mm-hmm. So if you could paint that exactly how it is, that's dope. But what if you paint it and then double it, like copy it, duplicate it, then set it off a little bit to the right, he's got a little bit of orange in there with the blue to accent.
And that's where the craft comes in and where the unknowingness of it all comes in, right? How to alter it, when to stop. When to take away, when not, because you have limitless possibilities.
Yeah,
like you said, if you're fucking around with a program, or even you, like a painter, could just go on forever on one thing, and it'll never end.
Right.
So it's about like, oh, this enough, or this is that, and
like, why was Clifford the dog red? What if he was blue? how do we feel about that, you know?
Right. Yeah, that's the thing. It's like I like all styles. I think they all serve their purpose. But yeah, there's something to be said about, because the graphic designers, they get a lot of information across with less.
Right.
Yeah, a lot of information.
Like, I think it was, what was the artist that did Charlie Brown?
Eric Schultz.
Charles Schultz. I think it was
him. Eric Schultz. Shout out to Pulp Fiction.
Eric Stoltz.
I think it was him that said, I don't know if it was him, but I think he said, like, you want to get across the best image with the least amount of marks. Mm. So, like, you know, like,
it makes sense.
Linus and the Blanket or Charlie right. Brown. It's a simple drawing, but it's iconic.
It's just what it represents, right?
Or, like, back to McDonald's, the Golden Arches.
What stands out? Like, exactly, you're right. Like, Charlie Brown with his shirt?
Yeah.
That's monumental. It's just that simple. Little M across his shirt.
Exactly.
You would think, anybody could do that, but, like...
But no.
It's a lot more than you
think. You know, it makes perfect sense for him to say that, because, it turns out it was all, like... Charles Silverstein who said that, because they had like similar styles, right?
Yeah, I mean, it could have been anybody.
But just Charles Schultz, that it's true, because every character represents something, right? Mm-hmm. And that one girl just wears a blue dress, right? And the one girl just has a little bow. And it's like simple things that represent each individual, right?
But then you never know. Like, you could talk to the artist and they could be like, oh, I was just drunk and high one night and I drew this thing. And
that's what makes it great. Because what
they didn't even put thought into it.
What does Sigmund Freud say? Like, sometimes a cigar is just a cigar.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because that's what they said about Robert Frost. I don't know if this is... I've heard this story. I don't know what if Robert Frost is being honest or lying or whatever. But I guess there's a story where this college professor was going on and on about, you know, dissecting the poem, you know, stopping by the woods on a snowy evening. Right? And he was talking about how it represents death and how the character's talking about this and this is death and all that stuff. And at the end, like, Robert Frost was there and he's like, no, I literally just was dying by the snow. Right. I was dying in the woods in a snowy evening.
Right.
You know, but...
That's funny you say that, because a lot of people do hang on to theories, right? So, like, there's, like, the biggest theory that I did so much digging into, hoping that it was so factual, but it wasn't. So, like... Donda, right? The intro, Donda Chan, mm-hmm. There was a theory that was his mom's heartbeat.
Correct. I read
Donda.
That.
Donda. And I hope to God that it was true. Like, I had three homies send me their DM like, bro, that's so dope. Kanye did that. In my head, I'm like, I wish it was true.
Right.
I'm like, but it isn't.
Right.
But yeah, man, that's crazy.
Yeah, that it's like when they say you meet your hero and you're let down.
Right.
And you're led that.
Right.
I haven't met Kanye in person, but we dapped hands.
No, but I mean,
but you're right. Yeah.
Oh, you dapped him?
Yeah, we
dapped him at the concert. Yeah.
At the Yeezus tour.
You guys both went, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what was cool about the Yeezus tour?
I've seen him like 8 times. I've only seen him twice.
I've seen him 10 times. So Jesus King was amazing. But so he was like literally like on a cube, right? And our brother Chris, he had like the plug, so we were able to get like the VIP tickets for the pre-sale price. So we were able to literally...
We were in the pit.
Next to Kanye.
We got there real early, so right in the front.
So this was Kanye performing right here.
Did he have the mask on?
Yeah.
Yeah, he had the mask on.
And K-Dot opened for him.
K-Dot opened.
Before I knew who Kendrick Lamar was.
And he got off the stage and he dabbed everyone in VIP, like in a circle. Wow. I was like, I'm never washing my right hand. Like, I still feel his hand clapping my hand.
Did he have the drum machine on stage?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He did the Runaway.
He did Runaway. He did it all. Yeah.
Did it have the screen flat to the machine? I don't know if you can remember this, but I just want to know, was it the MPC 2000?
Oh, I'm not going to know that, dude.
No, but like...
It had the buttons.
It had the buttons, but the screen, was the screen lifted off of the machine or was it flush with the machine?
I think it was flush.
That's the 2000.
Okay, I don't remember it being in an angle from them, but yeah.
So when you're saying 2000, is that why he made this album as long as Space Odyssey 2001?
I don't know what he used for this one, but like, I have the MPC 2000 also.
I'd always go to Sandmash to practice.
Dude, we gotta bring it over. You gotta mess around with it, man.
Dude, yeah, dude, when he did the Runaways on that,
that shit made me cry.
With the red outfit on the MTV Awards, the VMA iconic,
Awards? Dude. Yes, it's iconic. With Pusha coming out, just hits,
with the gold chain and everything.
Oh, you was watching? Bing. Who the fuck was it? Yeah.
Well, I think with that, man, you know, I think we had, you know.
But hold on.
You want something to say?
I wanted to ask you, because I was asking you about how you feel about creative designers, right? Mm-hmm. Like, how do you feel about NFTs? Are you familiar with those, the non-fungible tokens? Because I feel that's our new
art show.
That's a new Getty Museum.
That's
a new LACMA. So I feel we got to...
Let's make one.
Get in an NFT and make one. We got Logan Paul fucking... using 20 Ethereums that are worth $130,000 to right. purchase a fucking NFT, bro.
Right.
I looked into it a little bit when it first came out, and I'm still very interested, and I wanna get into it. But what you follow Gary V?
Yeah, Gary V's the shit, so, man.
He was talking about...
He's that entrepreneur guy, right?
Yeah.
He's like very like straightforward.
Yeah, he's talking dope, about man. How an NFT, it could even be something more than art. Like, it can be an experience with a celebrity. Say, like, maybe yep. LeBron James or such and such becomes a gambling addict and right. gambles all of his money away. And he needs money, so he makes an NFT to have dinner with him.
What?
Like, yeah. Gary Vee talked about that. So it's like, it could even be more than just a piece of art. It could be an experience or... Oh, you're going to go with Shaquille O'Neal to the Reebok factory for $20,000. That's the NFT.
Right.
Damn.
That's crazy, right?
Like, there's one cat I follow, Big Noah. He's, like, in the industry. He purchased the NFT of Kanye's Sunday service. And I saw it. I'm like, damn.
Kanye sold it?
I guess he purchased it from somebody. But someone created it.
But it's just an image, right?
It's just an image, but like it's like the new GIF. Like I feel like
it's not a video,
but the image can be replicated, and it'll be look exactly the same. Correct.
Well, that's what NFTs. You don't owe it because I don't know, man. I'm not too educated on it. But
so wait, my understanding of the NFT is this: like an NFT or images, right? So far, right now, right? They're images, but you can replicate that image by printing it out because it looks the same, because all you do is own a digital copy of it.
Right.
But a digital copy could be emulated anytime.
It could be a file of a video.
Correct. But that could be emulated.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's not like...
But it's not the original file.
And correct. You can sue, right?
The
copyright?
Difference between... No, you can't. No. Because you can copy those because... The original file, for example, take a Basquiat painting, right? That's a print. We know it's a print.
Mm-hmm.
The original is only one of a kind. It's an original.
Right.
And the prints are formed in a different way by taking a bunch of pictures and putting them together.
Right.
But an NFT is just a digital image. And there's no distinction between a digital image and a copy of a digital image other than like, oh, that's the original. But there's no distinction.
Mm.
So that's what the difference is. But that's the big thing, though.
Yeah, like I could, when I first heard about it, I was like, oh, there's going to be, like, say you purchase, you know, five to 10 NFTs of artist artwork.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody's ever seen this artwork.
Correct.
But then you do like an online virtual reality tour of this art
mm.
in an art gallery, right?
Right.
So like you're charging viewers, hey, you could come in for $10 and you check out this art that's never been seen by anybody.
Right.
Like, will somebody, I think somebody will pay for that, but
I'm sure, yeah.
I don't know.
I think it's going to
come through this art
I think
show.
It's going to evolve.
I don't know if I
think
would,
it's going to evolve like you state. Future, like I think it's going to evolve like anything, but the artist, the original artist still owns it so far.
I personally.
That's how it is, but I'm sure it's going to get to the point where like, oh, you'll be the sole owner of
like, right? Look at with COVID, like people.
There's an NFT of COVID?
No, but people aren't going out as much.
Yeah.
Right.
So
right.
In order to visit an art gallery,
right.
Is it a virtual
that's reality what I think.
Type
yeah.
thing? You know what I mean?
So I feel
is that
it's
the future. I don't
like
know.
Like memes, right? People love memes now. People wake up to post memes. So I think it's in the same ballpark. So, like, same thing with GIFs.
Yeah.
Like, if we're laughing at someone, we use, like, a GIF.
Right.
Or an emoji. So, I feel later on in the future when we really get into this crazy-ass world we live in, we're not going to be able to use emojis. We're not going to be able to use GIFs because people own them.
So specific...
That's what I personally feel. GIFs. So, it's going to be a copyright. Like, you can't use this.
So, for example, those specific GIFs that are very popular, if we see the people over and over again, you think they're getting paid?
Well, I think the artist.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, like, say a Kanye.
Like that lady pointing at that fucking cat, the one that kept doing some noise.
Oh, no, yeah. she's not gonna get paid for it. It's on the internet.
But that's what I'm saying. Is that gonna get to a point
of
getting paid?
Anything I post.
Because there's that one dude, the black guy with the reaction, right? Who's like, oh, who's got like that stone face constantly. And you see that everywhere and they just change it up.
Like Bad Luck
Brian. Probably not getting paid.
Yeah. Right.
No, but it's like.
Yeah, that's an interesting.
Because when you sign up to Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, whatever it may be, there's a big ass contract. You sign everything off.
Right.
Oh, these are ideas. So you tweeted this? It's on our business.
The evolution is about, like, well, I'm going to create something, but it's not going to get out. But if it doesn't get out, you don't know what's going to hit.
So if you posted something on your Instagram that went viral as a GIF or whatever, they would have the intellectual properties for
it.
Yeah.
And then everyone will steal your design as well. Like, I see people that, like, do designs, right?
Yeah.
And big companies with, like, way more followers.
Of course.
Follow these up-and-comers, take their design, put it on the t-shirt, and make money. And I'm like, God damn.
That's why you got to be careful where you put your shit out, because you know what? You know what I feel? Shit. That's why I don't, not that I'm saying that I'm not this big creative guy out there, but that's why I don't post a lot of stuff, because I feel that's where your creativity goes, your creativity energy. Not that someone's going to take it. Who gives a fuck about that?
Right.
Because that means, like, oh, that's, well, that means something's good about it. The point is, like, I feel like when people do that or they post or they meet constant, that they're putting all their creativeness in that instead of putting the creative energy on something else, because sometimes you have to just harness it.
Right.
Going back to that, like, man, you got to keep those embarrassing moments to yourself. The whole world don't have to learn about it.
Right.
Because it eventually comes out somewhere, right? Because maybe your next painting... That came out, you know what I mean?
Like, did you guys follow that, the thing with Banksy, where he shredded his painting?
I heard about it, but I didn't follow up on it.
You didn't follow that?
Nah.
He...
Let me hear it.
I guess there was a gallery that had his painting. It was at an auction, that's what it was. So, you know, picture the paintings in the room, and this guy's like, yeah, 10,000, 20,000, such and such. And everybody's trying to bid on it. And he goes, so it gets up to like a million, maybe 2 million, I forget.
Wow.
So sold to the man in the white with
1,000,005.
And then you look at the painting and it goes beep. And it starts shooting out like a printer. Like a copy machine.
Okay.
And it starts coming out and it shreds the entire painting.
And then what happened?
So he bought a joke. So what happened was he pretty much went on eBay and said, I'm selling this PS5. But he didn't even read the description that said, I'm just selling a PS5 box.
So I don't know the follow-up to that.
That's what it sounds like to me.
There's a I'll send you the video.
Okay, that's for sure.
Crazy. But it's just this guy.
So he literally bought something that got shredded.
Yeah. But you know what? I think it only got shredded halfway though. So he could display it still.
The whole thing, the experience of it, right?
Yeah, so that's like an art piece in itself, is the bottom is all shredded up, but then there's half in a frame.
Damn.
And he's like, oh, I mean it's a viral moment.
Right.
Oh, I paid $1,000,005 for this Banksy.
And none of us, I guess, even know who Banksy is, huh?
So that was the question, was the gallery in on it? Did they know? And I guess he posted something of him creating and designing the mechanism that shredded it. Like it shows him putting the painting into a frame, and then the shredder, and like the timer.
Wow.
So, and he must have been... either in the crowd, so he hit the button, or there, because how would he know when it sold? You know what I mean? Like, because as soon as he said it was sold, then it shredded.
Good point.
He was.
And I love those theory. Yeah, maybe
he was in the crowd.
I wouldn't doubt it.
Like, that's that guy. He's taking art to another level.
So hearing this, I don't think the art place knew about it.
You don't think so?
I don't think so.
You think he was just like incognito in the crowd somewhere.
I would be, yeah.
Right? I don't know, man. It seems like a lot to put up without them knowing. Especially this day and age where we're so worried about our security and our safety and all that.
Insurance reasons.
You know, what's his mechanism?
They don't want to get sued.
Right.
Because, like, there's this theory that my homie Ryan said, and I clamped onto it because I think it's true and it holds weight. Like, kind of how there's a lot of sports companies that use COVID as an excuse. So, let's say, for example, we have a big boxing pay-per-view coming up, and it doesn't sell that much. We're just going to pretend and a COVID outbreak happened, and we're going to postpone it. So we could have more of a stacked card,
right?
More of a better venue. So right. Like what you're saying about the banks.
More hype about it.
Yeah, so like hiding things under the rug, like I think that happens a lot more often than not.
Do you think that the Drake and Kanye thing is manufactured, or do you think it's real?
I think it's manufactured in a sense, maybe. I don't know, because it leaked the intro where Kanye's talking and he says, for Drake's new album. Kanye's in the intro, supposedly, where he says, yeah, they call Drake the certified lover boy because he smashes all of Kim Kardashian's homegirls.
What is this song?
Supposedly, it's Drake's intro for his Certified Lover Boy album. And he has Kanye West saying that, and it transitions into a song. So,
that
yeah.
Came out?
I heard the snippet. I'm not sure if it's true. We'll find out once the album drops. But I think it's staged to bring out the competition in people and to make everyone feel more excited about music.
So you think, like, behind closed doors, they're saying, hey, you know it's all good.
We'll have a drink, bro. I believe so.
But... because for a while, it seemed like it was pretty
that
real.
He smashed him?
When he was like, Kanye
did
was
feel
like,
that way.
Drake sent me devil emojis.
Yeah.
And he was all upset.
No, yeah. There's a train going by. Hold on, Drake.
I don't know. With me, right. I don't really follow that, so I don't know. But I would think that, dude, like, I don't feel like everything is fabricated. Because is it really going to spice up the idea? Like, oh, not really. No, not to me. Like, you really think it's going to pass to the idea, oh, it's going to make Donda album better?
Rod,
dude,
did you
nothing.
Watch?
Well, nothing could have saved that Donda album, man.
It's going to make people do the first stream.
Well, I'd say just because, like, for this music alone, I was like, oh, like, dope. But you're going to get the casual Kanye fans that love Drake that are probably going to go and do that, maybe.
To see if he says anything.
Maybe. That,
hold on.
Yeah.
Not say that it was number one in 150 countries. This is the first time anyone has ever done it in fucking this era.
That's cool. Good for him.
Exactly. So,
but to me, that
so that's
mean
part of it. No one's ever done that, period. So first ever, Christopher Columbus.
I mean, I don't know.
Like, remember the
I think
Kanye
this new age is everything's about hyperbole.
Remember the Kanye and 50 Cent battle to
see
who could sell
but
the
that was because
albums.
50 Cent, he was dropping big time. His rap game had already gone. He was just trying
not
to...
Not really.
But maybe
yeah, he was trying to incite something, and Kanye was the big thing. So, it, like, Curtis trying to incite something. He was trying to cling on to something, you know?
Like... this is these people's livelihood, so there has to be something behind the scenes. Like,
it makes logical sense.
Like, hey, what? Just like fighters, right?
Yep.
Like, you're going up against something, somebody. Hey, like, I'm gonna talk some shit about you. Mm-hmm. You talk some shit about me.
Right.
We'll hype up the fight. We'll make more money. Right.
Exactly. Like, perfect example.
But I think that's specific to that. Combat sports. It works in the combat sports. I don't think it works.
But like,
in
I
music.
Remember Rock.
You know, with
up.
Music, we're just gonna think like, oh,
it
Drake said 44, 45.
Yeah, bro.
I was like,
but think about it. I remember growing
you know,
up.
Did
Rock.
You really care?
Yeah,
okay.
I did. I like, mean, I'm interested in it because I want to know if it's real or not.
Okay.
And
dude, like, you were all about game dissing Giona, the 300 bars. Were you on that?
Oh, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. So, like,
well,
I remember...
was that fabricated?
I think so. He was signed under 50 Cent, so 50 Cent never dissed him.
There's definitely...
he was making so much money.
There's definitely real beefs that happen.
Yes.
But they could use it to their advantage.
Yes.
And they...
correct.
And I wouldn't be surprised if throughout all these beefs... that there's a conversation.
So creative to be that way.
behind the scenes.
Would you call this a beef, though?
Hey, let's
call
it like keep a little
appetizer. I'll call it Pulp Fiction. I'll like, call it a movie, a classic.
Like, me and you have beef. We'll go, you know, we're both putting out something.
Right.
And I say, hey, look, just don't say anything about my family.
Yeah.
But say anything about my looks or whatever.
Right, right.
You know? And then, and there's probably that those conversations that happen, and then maybe somebody crosses the line, then it gets worse or whatever, right? But yeah. These people are trying to make money. That's the end game.
Well, I guess more than anything, they're trying to be relevant, right?
Pusha T said,
because both of these guys already have plenty of money, right? So I think it's almost like a thing where they're trying to stay relevant and stay on top.
No, they're entertaining. So, like, for example, like Pusha T exposed that Drake had a kid. Like, Drake knew that. But Pusha did it. Gave Pusha a pedestal, and it elevated that Drake beef.
Right.
In addition, like, I remember growing up telling my homies, like, bro, hip-hop is WWF. Like, well, one's gonna... Yeah. That's what we're talking about. It's a persona.
So it's
like,
politics.
It's politics. Right. Like, no one's gonna grow up wanting to bump. I'm from 90210. I drove a Benz at 13.
I think, like, Republicans and Democrats probably meet... Like, say in Washington.
Right.
They're probably meeting at a bar and... Just like buying each other drinks.
Hell yeah, dude.
Like, hey, fuck Ron you.
Ron Paul be like, yo.
Like,
well, I think at this point.
Yo, man, don't limit. Let me get that Jaeger for you.
I feel like
at this point. Yeah, like when you're all drunk at a party and
right.
somebody wants to buy you a beer, like you're gonna fuck. Maybe you have different views.
Well, I think at that point, man, like
I'll entertain it.
The framework's already laid out that you're just playing a part. Yeah, you guys don't even need to meet face to face. You already know, like, everyone has their script. Everyone has an ideology.
Right.
Like, every person that I've seen that has has their specifics, like, oh, they're for Trump and they're for the guns and all that, they all have the same script. Mm-hmm. Just like the other people that are for Biden and for this. Everyone's the same script. Mm-hmm. No one deters from each other. Everyone has the same. So everyone's just a personality. We all follow the same shit. So it's like, there's really nothing to learn.
No,
they just follow an ideology.
So now that adds to the Donda album rollout, why it's so amazing. Kanye is Christian, right? Pushing this envelope, right? Christians are supposed to forgive everyone, give someone an extra chance, right? Kanye had DaBaby on the porch and Marilyn Manson.
Right, right.
Marilyn Manson is going through this crazy abuse.
Can we push pause?
Yeah, let's
push. I gotta hit the bathroom.
Oh yeah, hit it, bro.
I want to talk about this.
Do you like that gold bathroom, bro? Like that gold toilet?
I saw Smith's poster in there. Is that your favorite?
Oh, the Morrissey nude? I just got that because I got the greatest.
The Morrissey nude.
It came out with a set, the Queen is Dead set, remastered set. It was like four LPs, and that came with it. So I was like, oh, let me put a.
What's your
on
favorite?
It.
Between the Morrissey and the Smiths, what's your favorite album between the...
Fuck, man. I love the Smiths' self-titled. I mean, I like all the albums, but if I would pick an album that's one of my favorites, I love the Smiths' self-titled. And then in Morrissey, man, you know, I think the Your Arsenal. Kill Uncle has grown me a lot, even though I think it's one of his least successful ones.
Which one is Cemetery Gates on?
Cemetery Gates, that's on The Queen is Dead.
I like that one a lot.
It's a great album, man.
Is it Viva Hate on that?
Viva Hate, that's Morrissey, his first solo album.
Cemetery Gates, you know what's crazy about that song? Is Reg, the oldest grand brother, he would play that.
They love Morrissey, dude.
And so, as a kid, like, I would hear
it coming from the walls.
I would say, hey, can you burn me that tape? Or can you record a tape for me? And so he would drop, you know, he's I don't know if anybody knows this, but like he's a huge influence on my artwork too.
No, right? I did not know that. How so?
Reg is the man.
Because do you remember Mark Gonzalez, the skater?
Yeah.
So he was an artist skater and he would draw these crazy faces with these big eyes and these big lips and this nose, and so I think Reggie had a Mark Gonzalez skateboard.
Okay.
It was from Vision Skateboards, right? And so, like, us as kids, we would see him skating, we would see him playing. So we wanted to be like,
right,
like them, you know?
Yeah.
Like him and Rico.
Right.
You met Rico, right?
I never knew him, rest in peace, but I know that was one of their closest friends.
So everything that they did, you know, we looked up to them. So, you know, Reggie played me my first NWA tape.
That's tight, fucking man.
The Smiths. So anyway, like, he would dub me a Smiths tape, and then he would draw on it. Like, he'd make his own album cover to it.
Dope.
That's
and so,
sweet.
Like, some of his characters that he did, I use in my stuff, and I've, like,
experienced. Wow.
Since I was little, I looked up to him, you know?
Yeah, Reggie's a shit. That's fucking Reggie awesome, man.
Reggie's dope as fuck. And he's super shredded.
I just talked to him the other day, because I work graveyard, and he's working, I think he leaves the house, like, 2:33 a.m.
Early, right? Yeah. Oh,
so shit. I just called him, like, out of the blue, because we listen to some of the same, like, Your Mom's House podcast.
I heard it here and there, but I know he prays to Joe Rogan, which is awesome, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you always talk about
yeah, Rogan. Like, he loves Rogan.
And you like Tiger Belly, right?
I love Bobby Lee, man. I love fucking
Bobby.
I don't miss a Bad Friends episode.
What about Tiger Belly?
I've been getting more and more into it, but I love Bad Friends more, man.
Because Santino.
Him and Santino. And yeah, I watched it from the get-go, from start one.
It's a good
When it first came out, I was on it, and I
chemistry.
Just... I love it, man.
What about when they sing the song about his dad dying?
He's like, I die.
My dad's dead.
Dad, why you die? And I love that he always starts with a song, man. He's so creative.
Hey,
and I think I didn't want to lose track on them. Do you think Reggie or Bobby Lee or Andrew Santino were hanging out in front of the house with Kanye? Because you guys were talking about the baby and Marilyn Manson.
Right.
I wanted to get back to that because I want to hear what you thought about that.
What did you think about that, man?
I was listening to the album last night. I was painting the Mickey Mouse painting, adding
nice.
Some more stuff to it, and I put the Kanye on my headphones because I wanted to be prepared. I had already listened to it, but I want to listen a little bit more in an elevated mind state. Right?
Definitely.
So I started listening.
Artistic. Right? You're hitting those artistic.
Because
eyes.
He's got the paintbrush in his hand.
And so I started thinking about it. Like, I felt like he's using. Kanye wants he always talks about wanting to help humanity, right?
Yeah.
He always talks about he wants to create clothes for kids so that they don't get bullied or
right.
You know, like the Ellen appearance was crazy.
Yeah.
So like he always in all of his interviews through the years, he's like, I wanna help people. That's why he asked Zuckerberg for all this
money
or whatever,
dead,
right?
Yeah.
Right.
So, like, I was listening to the album, and he's taped... So, Marilyn Manson and the baby, they're both going through these public persecutions through what they've said or done.
Right.
And so, like, he's sending an olive branch to them, like, I want to help you get through this. Because he's been through so much himself.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Look at the Taylor Swift thing or whatever, right? So he's... And then also the kids in Chicago.
Yeah.
And, like, just kids in general, the youth.
Yeah.
He wants to show them a way other than violence or drugs. Like, use your creativity in order to make money and to make something of yourself.
Right.
That's why, you know, like... He had Larry Hoover on from...
He had Larry Hoover Jr.
Larry Hoover Jr.
on the Jay Electronica song.
So he was the leader of the
Gangster Disciples
in Chicago,
mm-hmm.
right? That's like the prominent... Is that the prominent gang
yep.
in Chicago? Or So as I was listening to it, I kept hearing these... Like, it kept making me feel like, oh, I see what he's trying to do, like... He's trying... When people lose everything, when they're at their lowest moments, they turn to God, right? And so, like, he's trying to help people get over whatever they're going through.
Right.
Just in general. And then, yeah, like Marilyn Manson, the baby are... public examples of that.
Right.
So I feel like that's why he brought them out. Like, imagine if he got Marilyn Manson to turn to Christianity.
Dude, imagine the beautiful people. The beautiful people. That'd be great.
I mean, but then there's some people who will say, oh, he just does it to cause
well, you're always promotion. you're always gonna have critiques, right?
Yeah, but I think his intentions are good.
They're pure, because like the like the Donald Trump thing, because he even said it himself. He's like, man, yeah, Mac Miller rapping about Trump, yeah, Young Jeezy rapping about Trump, Snoop Dogg taking pictures with Trump. He was talking to him Trump
about jail reform or about prison reform,
trying to get Larry Hoover out and Kevin Cooper, the Chino Hills house.
Oh, really?
Kevin Cooper house. Him and Kim Kardashian were trying to get him out, because I remember in junior high or high school, we would always go to Green Mist and the Kevin Cooper house.
I didn't know that.
And I remember one of my best friends growing up, one of my good friends still to this day, Danny, who one of his family members like are part of like the cop history industry, whatever. But like in that same house, that Kevin Cooper house, during the break-in, they found like a lot of orange hairs. So supposedly the person that broke in was a redhead. It wasn't Kevin Cooper. So like
they wasn't there a survivor there though?
There was there was a girl who played dead. Right?
There was a girl who stayed the night and she played dead in the closet or
something like that. Yeah.
So she couldn't she identify?
Maybe, yeah.
Who the killer?
I mean, I don't know about any of that. I think, you know.
Yeah, I'm going to sit this one out right now.
I think on that note, man, I think, you know, I want to just say, man, I'm glad you came in. This better not be the last time.
Dirty Winners, baby.
You know, keep
drop that handle, baby.
Keep that art pumping. Where can we find your artwork,
that
man?
Apple Music, Spotify Music. How can we find your music, baby?
Dirty Winners on Instagram. Just search Dirty Winners. You'll find everything from stuff on Spotify to Apple Music, SoundCloud, Instagram, art for sale. I haven't sold any music, but maybe in the future.
Keep churning it, baby. Thanks, man. Yeah. Love you, bro.
That's what we do. Right, thank you so much, Dirty Winners. Thank you so much, Ron. Undeniable Perception, episode 34, the Shaquille Edition, a.k.a. Donna. Thanks, everybody. Love y'all, and keep leading with love. Take it easy.
Peace.
Peace.